God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Action Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like to welcome you. Anyone can use the chat function to send their phone number to the newcomer privately. Anyone here in their first 30 days? The newcomers, okay.
Hello, my name is Jeffrey. I'm an alcoholic. I'm on my 16th day.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good to see you.
Jeffrey, welcome.
Welcome, Jeffrey.
Nice to see you again.
Good to see you too. Anyone else? Okay, this is our preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one. This is, we devote 2 weeks to step one. This is our second week. Please welcome our panel this evening, Mary Beth and Karen. Thank you, Mary Beth and Karen, for joining us. So the way it works is I'll read a paragraph and then our guests will each share for a few minutes on the reading. And around 7:50, we'll start wrapping things up so as to finish by 8 o'clock. And I am going to let you two choose, decide who goes first in the sharing, and I will get the reading up here in just a moment. Let's see here. That's not it, beg your pardon. Yes, that is it. Bear with me, folks. Okay. Okay, from page 5. I woke up. Oh, I beg your pardon. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. From page 5, I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business. And so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then. And I did. Mary Beth or Karen? And if you need me to put the reading back up, just let me know.
Hey, I'm Karen. I'm an alcoholic. Great to be here with you guys tonight. To introduce myself, my home group is up here in North Jersey. If you're ever up here on a Wednesday night, we meet on Wednesday night. We're a big book study group. My sobriety date, September 6, 1989. I have a sponsor. I sponsor women, and I'm hopefully in the middle of the pack. What I got out of this reading was an identification. Is this the action of the allergy on my life? And when I read this, every time I think this is so much like myself that I'm thinking, and knowledge is going to keep me sober if I just keep trying a little bit harder. You know, that just, you know, renewing my resolve, I'm going to try again. And I'm just going to absolutely going to be okay about this. And I forget, one of the things about drinking is that when I drink, I cannot bring to mind the remorse of yesterday, that all I've got is this obsession of the mind. And it seems that this is just one of the ways that alcoholism is showing up in Bill's life. It's the absolute action of allergy on his life. A few minutes, right? That's what you wanted us to do. Okay, Mare, all yours.
Thanks, Kara. Hi, my name is Mary Beth, and I'm an alcoholic, and it's good to be with you guys tonight. Hi. Oh, I like your waving. Hello. It's good to see you guys. I have a home group. It's designed for living. We meet, I'm here at the Jersey Shore, so I'm an hour south of Karen. So we're kind of like in the middle of you guys and Karen. She's up further north. And so we meet on Sunday nights. We're a big book study. Everything's online, nothing in person. Sunday night, big book study. Wednesday night, speaker meeting. If you want to go to the intergroup, NNJAA.org, our information's there. We're starting the book again, November 1st. We're finishing up with the traditions. After we do a cycle, we do traditions and a cycle and concept. So one more week of the traditions, anniversary, and then we're starting back up. So we'd love to have you all. See how I like adapt so quickly, right? Y'all, come join us. I have a sober date, November 23rd, 1996. Karen's my sponsor. I'm in the middle of going through the work with her, having a new experience, continual spiritual surrender for me. And I have the opportunity to sponsor other women. And I too want to remain in the middle of the pack, Karen, like you had said. And so, you know, the identification that I have with it, one of the things that I love, and welcome to the newcomer with 16 days. I think one of the most freeing things I heard early on was to identify and not compare. And I have such a closed mind that I start to read Bill's story, you know, after a doctor's opinion, I'm thinking to myself, what could I possibly identify with a guy, you know, stockbroker, 30s, yada, 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 all the externals. The more I read this, the more identification I have, because my story changes over time, because I do. So I too, you know, I look at this and I woke up, I saw I could not take so much as one drink. So really in all of this, physical allergy, like I know what's going to happen if I pick up that first drink, but my mind's telling me this time it's going to be different. You know, this time I'm going to be able to handle it. So Bill like is realizing, you know, powerless over alcohol, and then the mental twist, you know, that comes up with that shortly afterward, I came home, where had been my high resolve? It hadn't even come to mind. So this mental twist, like in his thinking, starts off with our thinking that's going to lead him to the first drink, which is going to activate the phenomenon of craving. Say that three times fast. And then, you know, the renewing my resolve again. I'm going to stop this time. Time's going to do it, a little bit away from a drink. You know, this time I've got it. You know, what I know, my self-knowledge, my willpower, I'm strong. I can do this. I got it. Only to be the one banging on the bar. Oh my God, how could this have happened again? So complete identification in those first couple of paragraphs.
Thank you, Mary Beth and Karen. And for our next reading.
Can I add one more thought to that?
Absolutely, Karen.
On page 6, right after the paragraph that we read, The beginning of what we read, the paragraph that starts remorse, horror, and hopelessness, that to me really describes the symptoms of untreated alcoholism that Bill experienced. And that identification for me was really important in seeing how it showed up in my life. And it really showed up in my life where I could see he's being affected on page six by untreated alcoholism, the same as me. So it was like such an important realization when I was reading through this as well, when I got to the part on page seven that it said, oh, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, but I have no idea why. I just think that I have the control. So thanks.
Thank you, Karen. Okay, from page seven. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and I even had made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. Karen or Mary Beth?
Okay, go ahead, Mary.
Thanks. So, you know, oh my God, always, 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 even now, I love when Karen talked about the untreated alcoholism that Bill's in the grips of, that I'm in the grips of. And then this paragraph is like, I get a little bit of knowledge, you know, and like all these externals, like it's the money and it's the people and it's this and it's that. I have a little bit of knowledge. So surely that's what's gonna, you know, fix me. That I'm not really, you know, like it relieved me to know that I may be a little bit weak, but if I get just, if I learn just a little bit more about what's going on, I got this. Like that's my national anthem. I got this, I got this. You know, always using an external, you know, we're gonna talk about conceding to our innermost self. I had no idea it was an internal job. And the other thing that I love about this part of the book in step one is for me, it just continually paints me in a corner based on my experience and identification. Because if I'm not in that corner, there's nothing to come out from. So I think I got this. This time it's going to be different. And then once again, I'm right back into, you know, I'm being painted back into a corner, which I'm thinking is the worst place to be. But what this book is setting me up for is the solution that's going to come further down, like how dark it is before the dawn, right? This is a dark period time in Bill's life.
So what I wanted to add to what Mary Beth said about this was the it's like this merry-go-round we're on. Like I understand my incredible behavior, right, is weakened because of what happens when I drink, but I'm still thinking, so that the problem is in my mind, I'm still thinking I got control over my behavior and my behavior really has control over me. But I don't see that yet. I haven't got that link going on that I know that when I drink, I have a problem, but my thinking overrides my behavior, thinking I can just act better. I can just do it better. That there's no relationship yet between a spiritual experience that's going to change that behavior. So I looked at my incredible behavior in the face of the desperate desire to stop. I wanted to stop drinking. And I would do this. I got in so much trouble last night with my drinking. And I'd get up in the morning and I'd make this decision not to drink. And then by 11 a.m., it would be this thought, because that's how alcoholism manifested in my life, was through my thinking. It'd be this thought, you know, maybe that was a pretty harsh thought. You know, maybe that was a really bad idea. Maybe that one drink will just, you know, ease my nerves a little bit, not understanding the power of the allergy. But my thinking would always override the consequences of what I experienced, even the night before. It wouldn't even have to be weeks. And I could white knuckle it for a period of time, but I could not stay stopped. And he's faced with that right now. And I, like Bill, always thought that if I was just tried hard enough, if I just put more effort into it, if I could do it, I could stop drinking and my kids would not have to see me drunk. If I just tried a little harder, I always thought it was me. I always thought it was me. So my behavior was atrocious. The desperate desire to stop was explained, but then I'd forget about that because the alcoholism at the end stage of where we're at drives the decision, drives my drinking, and drives exactly what I'm doing. And that's where he's at.
Also, too, the progression, too, like how quickly I forget about the, you know, the remorse, the horror, the hopelessness of the night before or a couple of hours before, right? It's like then the mind starts to tell me, well, don't worry about it, Mary Beth. It was the people you were with. It was the gin you drank. They're not going to remember. We're going to read about that, too. They're not going to remember it anyway. Don't go to the bar on the left. You go to the bar on the right. And so this mental thing going on in me that you're absolutely right, Karen. There's no connection for me here between spiritual, mental, and physical. There's zero. And I'll even take it a step further. For me, it was like, as agnostic as I was, I'd be like, God, please don't let me drink today. Please, like begging. And then only, you know, for the frightful day would come. For me, it's the frightful hour would come. And then I'd be like thinking that even God, you know, can't help me because I beg for help with no connection to any of this and blaming it on everyone, not putting it all together.
So to continue your sentence, God was alcohol for me. So yes. If God failed me mm-hmm. and my actions failed me, my drinking never failed me because it got mm-hmm. me out of that feeling mm-hmm. of remorse temporarily. You know, he's mm-hmm. at on the top of the page. He could eat little or nothing. He's at end stage alcoholism. So he has to drink. And that's what I was. I had to drink. But you don't know that you have to drink.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And how beautifully they set it up because it's like liquor was a luxury, you know, and then ceased to become a luxury. And they make it so grandiose in the beginning of Bill's story, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, oh.
Good point.
Thank you both. Beg your pardon, I am.
Okay, so where are we now? Page 24.
I don't know.
Yeah, just. Here we go. I beg your pardon. I got my stuff mixed up here. Here we go. From page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove.
This is it. This is the mm-hmm. core of it, of mm-hmm. it. It manifests itself so many different ways in my life. You know, I really love it when here it says, for reasons yet obscure.
Obscure.
You know, that what does that word really mean? And that means that it's hidden from me. I can't see it. I cannot mm-hmm. visualize it. I cannot embrace it for reasons yet obscure. That means that they're hidden just for today anyway. And I liken it to my mind, you know, if I don't want to, you know, and I can still do that today. You know, if I don't really want to deal with something, just can go over there. Alcoholism allows this lack of understanding in the reality, delusional thinking to be applied unless we're really in the moment of our day and doing these spiritual disciplines. So he says, the fact that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, hidden from me, I lost the power of choice in drink. Alcoholism drives my choices. I don't think that's true. I think I'm driving my choices. I cannot stay stopped. Willpower becomes non-existence. It's absolutely true. I think that I am controlling it. I think that, oh, if I just do this much, then I'll have it all for today. But that's not how it works with us. I don't have any willpower with regard to drinking. I'm unable to bring into my consciousness that we're talking about on the page before. I can't even remember what happened yesterday, the consequences of yesterday. It's such a powerful driver, the obsession of the mind. A drink was my cure-all for everything. If I just take a drink, I'll be okay. My body is craving this. My mind is saying, listen, you have the body of an alcoholic. You can't drink. And my body is saying, but I need a drink. So we have this conflict that's going on at the core of our decision-making. Go ahead, Mayor.
And I love you for reasons yet obscure. I don't even get it yet. Like for most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, at this point in the book, I don't even get it. I don't even get that I have lost the power of choice. You know, choice, power, choice, and control, the three that are synonymous. And, you know, we're unable at certain times. I can't think the drink through. Like, here's what my mind's going to tell me. I'm going to pretty up a junkyard. Like, I'm not going to, you know, and here's how cunning, baffling, and powerful it is. First couple of times, I'll remember the horror. And then my mind's going to go, Mary, but it's not that bad. Wasn't that bad. Remember, you know, a week ago or whatever, this is all hidden from me here. Like, I don't even get it yet. And it's squiggly writing, right? Squiggly writing, important. And then at some point, I'm not even going to be able to resist taking that first drink. I am without defense. I have nothing in me, no power in me, that's going to allow me to resist taking that first drink, which is so obscure to me because it's all hidden. It's such a powerful paragraph that it's almost like every paragraph in this book is like setting me up. It's like one of those moments, like, wow. It's like another piece to this puzzle that all has to be put together, because it's really like starting to come together, and I have no idea, because I can remember the first woman that ever took me through the book. Like, it's going to talk about further on, like lurking notions or reservations. Every time I think like one might come up, it would hit me with a paragraph like this. She'd be like, you don't even know yet. And I'd be like, wow, it's just constantly the deflation of the ego, the hammering home, this powerlessness, no choice, no control, which I have no idea is setting me up for what's on the other side, which, you know, is later on in this process. But here it's like, seems kind of dim, you know, like it's telling me I'm screwed, basically.
Well, for reasons yet obscure has always been a line that I'm like, wow, on the look back, you know, as I stayed sober for a while, I began to see how my choice was driven by the need to drink. And it was driven by the need to drink because drinking is but a symptom of an underlying issue. I didn't get with for a long time that drinking was my solution, that alcohol was my solution to fit in, that I needed to drink because to stay stopped, to stay sober was just way too much. Mm-hmm. It involved way too many emotions, decisions, staying present in a situation that was out of control, being what I felt was forced to tell you things that I couldn't do, to admit to the failures of my life, couldn't do it. And this paragraph, when reasons obscure, I got my first sponsor really had me look at how that word showed up in my life. I want reasons obscure. If I didn't drink, I was screwed. She said, there you go. If you didn't drink, you were screwed. And now, does that make any sense? And I'm going, absolutely not. But at the moment and in the moment, I was terrified to stay sober, because the few times I tried, it was just too scary. I just, you know, longed for the drink to ease the writhing nerves that Bill talked about on page six. Mm-hmm. It was just unbelievable. And here they have this in squiggly writing. And I know that I was in trouble with drinking, but there was no way I could see a sufficient alternative that was going to possibly work in my life, other than the sponsor who seemed quite content without a drink, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Completely. There was no defense. I had none, nor did I care to have one, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Alcohol was my master.
Yep.
Like it talked about earlier in Bill's story. Alcohol was my master. Yes.
Thank you, Karen and Mary Beth. Our next reading is from page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better.
This is one of my favorite paragraphs in the book. Mm-hmm. So I'm really happy that we're talking about this, because this paragraph really describes how it presents itself in my life, right? I think what I have to say here is kind of how I feel about this chapter. Really gets to the core of how, when admitting this, I suddenly realize that I have a bright and glorious future by getting to the truth about alcoholism in my life. Mm-hmm. That I can thank God for bringing me to AA, and thank this chapter in particularly for bringing me to God. So there's two things that I see here that really helped me to see the truth about my alcoholism. You know, the word, the great obsession. So an idea so strong that I believe it to be the truth. That's a great obsession. And an illusion is that I believe something that's really a lie. It looks like it should be. You know, when I lived in a world of should be, could be, ought to be, that was my life in alcoholism. Seeing things exactly as it is and not as I would have them was not a thought that was part of how I operated, right? So it says the idea, and this is the reasoning I think that is behind total abstinence. The idea that somehow, someday, I will control and enjoy my drinking is the great obsession, an idea so strong that I'm going to believe this lie of me, an abnormal drinker. The persistence, and that means that I insist it to be that way, of this illusion of this great obsession, right, is so astonishing, many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. Like, I'm going to keep trying to prove to you that my thinking is the truth. Despite all the things you tell me, despite how you show me and show me in my life where I'm believing a lie, where this obsession to be right, the obsession to prove myself out that drinking isn't the problem, is just, you'll sit back the way my sponsor sat back and she said, okay, let's just talk about. And she went in this, what solutions have I tried? And she had me list through in this paragraph the solutions that I have tried to overcome this obsession of drinking that continually got me into trouble with everybody and everything in my life, right? And then when she brought me here, I had to learn that I had to fully concede. Concede means give it up. I had to agree to this, right? To myself, I'd agree to it fully inside that I'm an alcoholic. And I was like, but I'm not like my father. I'm not like my mother. I'm not like my family. I show up, I was functional. So I thought the illusion that I had of my life operating was not actually how it was operating. Because, you know, I go down a corridor of I would say, defending my alcoholism as a way of life is a good way of life. The destruction along the sidelines was amazing. And I just sort of stayed in the middle trying to believe, make believe that it was A-okay. And every once in a while, you'd get a glimpse of the destruction of the tornado that went through my life and my children's life, that I could see it when I got pressed for true answers. And it takes a good sponsor to do that. I didn't flee. It just took a, well, talk to me about what solutions you've tried. And she said, what was that based in? And she had me suddenly connecting the dots of, oh my God, none of it was real, right? She could see to my innermost self. She said, this is the first step to see the truth as it really is. To see that you're an alcoholic driven by an idea and an obsession or a thought that isn't even the truth. And she said, this delusion that we're like other people, and I love that it puts presently, because this could arise anytime. Presently means right here, right now, has to be smashed. On certain ideas, even recently at the beginning of COVID, I had an experience. Old idea came watching in my life, you know, and we have to be aware of old ideas coming in our life, you know, and in step 11, it gives us some real cool tools to become aware of those old ideas popping and cropping up. So it says has to be smashed. I'm not like another person. I'm not like a person who's never experienced this kind of obsession and mental illness. We do think differently. Thank God we have each other. So go ahead, Mary.
Thanks, Kara. You know, these couple of paragraphs for me, the first time that I read them with my sponsor, was really the first time in this process where she had me focus solely on me. You know, like when we're looking at our identification, you know, where we fit in there is a solution, our identification with Bill's story. When I got to this point, these couple of paragraphs, Malcolm, that you just read, they're designed to get me to my truth. And I believe for me, that's part of this concession of my innermost self. Like no one can diagnose me alcoholic. Like this comes based on my personal experience. And if I had these reservations, like I can remember, like, she talked to me like the countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. Oh my God, I was obsessed with doing that. I was obsessed with going out with my sisters who aren't alcoholics and only having a couple and planning what the night's going to look like and controlling it, you know, every hour or just, and the countless vain attempts to try to prove to myself that I was like that. And then, because I don't want to admit that I'm mentally or bodily different, but it tells me, you know, over any considerable amount of time, it gets worse, never better. Mary Beth, let's look at your history. We're not looking at anyone else's. We're not comparing ourselves to Bill. We're not, you know, you're not even looking at mine. You know, what a sponsor does for me is takes me to my truth. And, you know, it tells me if I'm a real alcoholic, which I have already identified with based on my drinking, I'm not the moderate drinker or the hard drinker. I know some of both. And I find myself in this real alcoholic, and it tells me that I will never, never recover control over alcohol. Like this is for good and for all, one day at a time. And over any considerable period of time, I can, and this was a lot of time, and I can picture Lily sitting across and saying to me, okay, so talk to me about how the allergy affected you. And Karen, when you were talking about it before, right? Alcohol had become my master. Mm-hmm. Like, there was no there was no power in it, although I had no idea. And the words, you know, the obsession, you know, it's the strongest thought I had, the obsession that this time it's going to be different, you know, and the illusion and the insanity, you know, pursued into the gates of insanity. What's insanity for me, which she helped me look at, is I do the same thing over and over and over again, expecting a different result. Oh, and I could still now, you know, Karen pointed it out. And one of the things is if someone's struggling, I can go to these couple of paragraphs. Mm-hmm. And even if it doesn't have anything to do with alcohol or go specifically in the beginning and how to be with alcohol, let's look at what you think you have power, choice, or control over, Mary Beth. And the conceding to my innermost self, I can't admit I'm powerless over alcohol until I concede to myself first that I'm an alcoholic. Because if I don't concede based internally, and here's kind of where the shift happens. Like, you know, it's, I always thought it was the external, but what it's telling me here is we're about to go on an inside job here, Mary Beth. First of which is conceding to yourself. You know, look internally. Look internally. And it's like you said, Karen, it's like, you know, what am I willing to give to? It's like the setup of when we get into step two and then three and all through the process, like these couple of paragraphs, I don't have any way out based on my experience. As much as my mind wants to tell me, it's smashed home that I don't.
You know, it makes a statement in that paragraph that starts with alcoholics about the ability to control our drinking. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll go into this further, but the control is simply illusion. Control the uncontrollable. You know, we've set forth in the first two paragraphs that what are the solutions that I have tried and they didn't work. And then it goes on to tell me that it's delusional what I've tried to do to control my drinking. And then they say, do I believe this or don't I believe this, that a real alcoholic ever regains control over drinking? You know, that's a question. Do I believe it or don't I believe it? I'll ask the people I'm working with, the women I'm working with, do you believe that or don't? And they'll go, well, maybe. And I say, okay, let's back up. Let's back up to that thinking. You think you can control your drinking once you take a drink? Is it a delusional thought that you think you can control your drinking or not? But a real alcoholic will never regain control. Then it goes on down here to say something really, by less control, we're led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And I'll say to them, do you even know what that means? They'll say no, usually. They'll say, okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about your worst experience. Waking up to one of your worst experiences. Tell me what that looked like. Now let's back out the evening or the day. What happened before? You know, talk me through that day. I said, did you have any control over that outcome? Well, no. And I said, because drinking takes you. And that's what they're talking about here. We're in the grip of a progressive illness, meaning that it's going to get worse and worse and never better for us with regard to our drinking. So I think that this is just a very powerful statement. Mm-hmm. I like to spend a lot of time here when I am working with newcomers in our meeting or old timers who have gotten complacent in their recovery and their experience is dry and they've forgotten who we are. You know, I'm the kind of sponsor who loves being on the front line and working with people who want to work in recovery. And if you don't want to work, we'll bring you here. And if you're at, no, I got it. It's like, okay, but when you don't, my door's open.
Thank you both.
I don't have it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. From page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they had prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come. I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, will one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more, for what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow.
Okay. Oh, we're talking about Fred. You know, Fred's problem was the physical allergy. He knew he couldn't drink. He knew that. He knew he couldn't drink. But a form of insanity that I think I see in his story is that he has a mind that tells him he can. You know, he's listening to the AAs that come and talk to him, you know, and they explain the physical allergy and the mental obsession, and they talk about a decision and a program of action. He's going, yeah. But I think I got this, you know, because he's got a mind that tells us that I can drink. And I think it's really interesting that at the top of where it says, I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to mind, it'd be nice to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. It doesn't say a couple of cocktails and go back to a treatment center. It doesn't say that. It says, my mind tells me that that's all I'm going to do. That's what the mind says. That's the mental twist, the phenomenon that happens in our rationalizing delusional thinking, because it doesn't tell me that I'm going to go back to the treatment center, because my mind says it's okay. So I've got a body I can't, which I acknowledge, and a mind that says I can. So the allergy takes over once the alcohol's inside you. And now he's in this place, right? He gets stuck in this hospital and he's going, oh my God, maybe these dudes were right. Maybe these people that came and talked to me have something there, but it's way too drastic for me to do these deals, you know? But then he thought about it. He thought about that program of action, and he's like, spiritual program of action. He's trying to defend the thinking. That's why I think this story is like people like me, I would defend my position, you know, and I still at times will defend a ridiculous position because I think I'm right. But I like to defend the position. And in my defense, I started to hear what they were saying, that my willpower took me to exactly where they said I would be, that I would someday one day drink unless I followed these proposals they laid out as a program of action, they say. So he discovered something really important that your reading didn't cover, but I would like to point out the discovery was that spiritual principles will solve all my problems. And when he thought that thought, he suddenly, instead of drinking, suddenly became willing. So the suddenly works two ways, right? The suddenly I'll pick up a drink, but if I become willing, honest, and open, just a pinch, because God doesn't care how much that looks like, I suddenly have a different experience. I suddenly have a, oh, peek into the truth. And that's what happens with Fred. I really enjoy his story a lot. Go ahead, Mayor.
Thanks, Kara. And you know what? One of the things that that really hits home with me about Fred is everything in Fred's life is wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, his life is wonderful here, you know, and it's not like life has been pretty good for him. And I just want to piggyback on what you said, because what I love about his story is it's very succinct in him not connecting all three. He's not connecting the physical, mental, and spiritual. You know, we read, we are without defense against the first drink. And, you know, the thought comes about having a drink. So he doesn't think it through, you know, a couple of cocktails. And I love that too, because chances are when Fred was like in the throes of his drinking, or like I was, I didn't think a couple of cocktails, but he doesn't connect at all. And unless you do, you're not going to get the spiritual piece or the answer. And it was very abundantly clear to him that, or to me when reading it, he had the willpower, he had the self-knowledge, he thought he knew everything. Thank you, I don't need this. You know, we're not ready till we're ready. Thank you, I don't need this. You know, you guys are worse. It's the mind just playing all the tricks, you know. the obsession of the mind until he realizes that, you know, he was hopelessly defeated. It's like that concession to his innermost self. Like, I surrender. You know, it's like when all three come together, and it's almost like Fred never conceded to his innermost self. And when he connects all three of them, and again, one of my favorite lines in the book is down below where that we didn't read, was that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. And when Fred accepts the spiritual aspect of it, his life just goes on to be something far beyond his wildest dreams that happened with me as well. You know, our disease is insidious, and Fred's a perfect example of it. You know, the cunning, baffling, and powerful. I love his story too.
So the identification here is really, was pretty important to me when I had that curious feeling that what these people, what my sponsor was saying to me was true, I suddenly felt better. So I thought that was interesting. I could really identify with that. And Mary Beth pointed out that discovery that made sense of that word obscure. You know, I was going to discover something new that I had never considered before. And then you read at the very end, and I know we only have a few minutes because you want to open up the meeting. It says, the problem centers in my mind. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense. So my problem centers in my mind. So the four personalities they show here, the four presentations of how I'm thinking in the four stories that are in this chapter really do outline the thinking of an alcoholic, like how we think. We're going to try something over and over and over again and expect something different to happen. We're going to absolutely have a reservation, a lurking notion. Mm-hmm. We're going to say self-knowledge. We're going to stop and not develop our spiritual condition and move further in the book. So this is the solution. My defense must come from a higher power. And do I have that kind of desperation to admit that? That has to come outside of me. That this is my ongoing process to get free. You know, and I have to go to the throne and not the phone. That's basically how we look at this chapter.
And I love how they end that sentence. That's part of the concession to my innermost self.
Yep.
Am I willing to concede that? All actions born in thought. If I don't change my thinking, I don't change my drinking. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Karen and Mary Beth. We actually have one quick reading left. Thank you both. This has really been time well spent. And from page 43, we have, once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. And we've got probably, I don't know, 3-4 minutes before we need to start wrapping up. Thank you both. Mary Beth or Karen.
Okay, so this is the absolute solution that this chapter talks about. You know, it brings us through a study about more about alcoholism, showing us where, for me, the problem centers in my mind and how I think. And being able to work with somebody who has walked this walk, our job as men and women in recovery is to share that experience, strength, and hope with the newcomers, to tell them our story, show them how the story moved into an experience so that we can be effective in letting them identify with, yeah, that kind of like is how I felt too, or no, or maybe somebody else can identify in a different way that makes them see. So there's two propositions really that come out with this sentence: at certain times I have no mental defense against the first drink. So my job is to tell them the story where I had no mental defense against that first drink, right? And that I couldn't have thought of the answer, that the answer had to come from outside of me, that the answer had to come from somebody who experienced what I experienced, that I thought myself alcoholic, where when I picked up the drink took me, and I had all of these reasons behind it, what it was really about, when here they're saying right here, my defense must only come from one source. Mm-hmm. Mary, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just want to say, and I love how they're going to set it up for that one source and we agnostics deep down in every man, woman, and child, right? And, you know, the paragraph ends with once more. It's like, again, you know, based on your experience, you know, Mary Beth, do you think you have power, choice, or control, or are ever going to regain control? And it starts in the beginning. You know, we are without defense of the first drink, and it's going to end here and say, once more, if you believe that, then your defense must come from a higher power. That's the solution.
Thank you both. Again, this is really was time well spent. Thanks so much for coming and joining us tonight.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
At the end of the meeting. Everyone will be unmuted at the end of the meeting so they can thank you too. I'm going to read our green card and you'll see in the chat the PayPal link, that's our basket. Our seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. And a word about safety and our common welfare. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. So are there announcements? Are there any AA related announcements? And I guess David maybe should unmute anyone who's, I don't see any hands raised, virtual or otherwise. No announcements? Okie dokie. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members raise their hand. Whoops. Thanks, folks. Sponsoring. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. Karen and Mary Beth, thanks so much for coming in and helping us tonight. Thanks to all who participated. And David will now unmute everyone so they can thank you as well.
Thank you, ladies. That was so good. It was perfect. It was inspiring, provocative, challenging. It was awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
That was
really great.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm on day one.
Thank you, everybody.
Day one. Welcome.
And I'm definitely going to make it to day two after this.
Oh, awesome.
Right on.
Welcome. Thanks, ladies.
Okay. Welcome.
Amy, would you like to read from page 164 for us? Okay. I'm going to go ahead.
Sorry. I was reading. I didn't know I wasn't me. Sorry.
I beg your pardon.
Sorry about that. The cats were listening though. Their ears are perked up. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
So for those of us who'd like to join us in the Lord's Prayer to close the meeting. Our Father.
Father,
in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses,
as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen.
Thanks, folks.
Thanks. Woo-hoo! Thank you, guys. Thank you.
That was awesome.